The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Leaders of NATO countries are currently arriving in The Hague for the second day of a two-day NATO conference. President Donald Trump landed last night after the bloc had agreed to an increase in defence spending. Now we're going to cross over to The Hague for the latest shortly. But first, in case you missed it yesterday, this is what President Trump had to say as he made his way to Marine One, leaving the White House for Europe.
Israel, as soon as we made the deal, they came out and they dropped a load of bombs, the likes of which I've never seen before. The biggest load that we've seen. I'm not happy with Israel. You know, when I say, okay, now you have 12 hours, you don't go out in the first hour and just drop everything you have on them. So I'm not happy with them. I'm not happy with Iran either. But I'm really unhappy if Israel's going out this morning because the one rocket that didn't land, that was shot, perhaps by mistake, that didn't land, I'm not happy about that. You know what? We basically have two countries that have been fighting so long and so hard that they don't know what the fuck they're doing. Do you understand that?
I suppose that's the first time, the very first time that the private language of President Donald Trump has emerged into the public domain. And as reports came out about U.S. strikes in Iran not actually having accomplished significant enough damage, Trump had this response aboard Air Force One.
Our B-2 pilots made this all possible. They had a magnificent hit in the dark of night with no moon, no light, no nothing. They hit the target perfectly, wiped it out. And the press is very disrespectful. I saw CNN fake news going, well, maybe it wasn't a perfect hit. It was perfect. They said maybe it did destroy it. We agree it did destroy it, but maybe it could have destroyed it more. No, it couldn't have destroyed it more. Everyone hit. And it's very disrespectful to those great geniuses and patriots that flew those planes through tremendous danger. So CNN and MSDNC are a disgrace. And so are the others. I mean, they're pretty much all in disgrace.
But the question is, what sort of a welcome is President Trump having at that NATO meeting? Well, if its chief, Mark Rutte, is anything to go by, it will be an extraordinarily warm welcome.
It is about having a productive NATO summit with Donald Trump, who's totally committed to NATO, but had one huge, big irritant. A pedal in the shoe, and that is the fact that the Europeans were not spending enough. Thanks to him, and I really want to thank him for this. The whole of NATO this year is reaching 2%. When I was there in March this year, already it was 700 billion in aggregate since 2016 when he came on board as Trump 45. And now the whole of NATO will commit to the 3.5, including defense enabling spending, 5%. And he is really a driver on this.
And that's Mark Rutte speaking to the BBC's Katja Adler. And of course, Mark Rutte sent an email gushing and fawning to Trump as he flew across the Atlantic. The praise from Rutte continued a few moments ago when he and President Trump spoke to the press, with Rutte praising his achievements with NATO since he first became president in 2016. We're going to The Hague now, where we're joined by Suzanne Lynch, Brussels Bureau Chief for Bloomberg, and Brett Boone, President of the Global Situation Room and former Director of Global Engagement at the White House during the Obama presidency. We'll start with you, Suzanne, first of all. What's on the agenda today?
Well, look, as Mark Rutte has explained there, the big issue for the European members of NATO is a commitment to spend more on defence. So the Allies are looking at a new target that countries will spend 5% of their GDP on defence. And that's kind of divided into 3.5% on core defence and then an extra 1.5% on related issues, maybe cybersecurity, not those core defence activities as such. Of course, what's really going to happen in the next few years is a conversation about how these countries are going to spend that. A lot of budgets across Europe are quite strapped. But for the moment, apart from Spain, which has raised questions about this target, most of these countries seem to be on board. And as you can hear there, the aim is to get that message through to Donald Trump. That is the aim here, to try and reassure him that European allies are stepping up, that they are spending enough in defence to ensure that Trump remains committed to this alliance. Because, you know, I think what's really scaring a lot of the countries, particularly on the eastern flank of NATO, is America's commitment not just to NATO, but to keeping troops that it has already in Europe, to keeping them there. Now, so far, so good this morning. We've just heard from Donald Trump. He was in a better mood, I think it's fair to say, overnight. He spent the night here in the palace of the Dutch King and Queen. And he had some positive things to say about NATO this morning, just in the last few minutes. in that joint press point with Mark Rutte. So there's a kind of a sense of optimism here that things will go okay before they're due to finish up early afternoon.
Now, the strategy of Mark Rutte was to confine the discussions largely to the budget questions and to therefore emphasise and reiterate that Europe was committed to upping its defence spending, therefore lessening the reliance, I suppose, on the American taxpayer. Will he succeed in keeping the agenda so narrowly focused?
I think he will. I think the big fear in the last few days has been that obviously the crisis in the Middle East, in particular the Israel-Iran war, was going to completely overshadow events. And in the last 24 to 48 hours, obviously we had the announcement of a ceasefire that looked precarious, but things have, relatively speaking, settled down between Iran and Israel. So the very fact that Trump is here now, he's staying for quite a long time. He's due to give a press conference, not until about 3 o'clock local time here. So people had really expected him to be quickly in and out, maybe that he wouldn't arrive at all, but he is here now. And it does seem to be focused on NATO, that issue itself, although he is obviously reacting to reports from the US and dismissing them, that the strikes on Iran maybe weren't as effective as he had made out them to be. Now, he did also say that he's due to meet Volodymyr Zelensky today. I mean, it's an issue for Ukraine here that they have been not quite sidelined, but they're not front and centre. Obviously, Ukraine is not a member of NATO, but Zelensky has been in The Hague since yesterday. He will have a meeting with Donald Trump. Donald Trump just confirmed that in the last few minutes. I have to say he didn't sound particularly enthused about it, but he did say he was going to meet Zelensky. But he also mentioned the fact that he'd been speaking to Putin a lot, as he put it. So we'll be watching closely to see what emerges from that meeting between Donald Trump and President Zelensky.
And that is happening on the margins, I presume. I mean, we know Donald Trump does not like the multilateral style of meeting where he's not the main person in the room, that he's got to share the limelight with other key figures, Mark Rutte being the chief of NATO, one of them, but also other leaders. He doesn't like that. He scurried out of the G7 on that very basis because he would have been surrounded by people who actually know a lot about what they're, you know, that they're talking about. And he is not a man for great detail.
Well, yes. I mean, he has, I mean, one issue that I think has worked, one challenge was, you know, how to get that attention of Donald Trump on the NATO issue. I think the decision to, he was the only leader to stay in the palace of the Dutch King and Queen last night, for example. He had pride of place at the dinner. He was seated at the table with the King and other figures, including, interestingly, the Italian Prime Minister, Giorgia Meloni, who he's known to get on well with. So that seems to have worked. He's here with his entourage. He's here with the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, the Defence Secretary, his Chief of Staff. They're all here, all present. The generally speaking, I mean, compared to other NATO summits, you know, the main session is going to be quite curtailed. You know, it's going to finish up by lunchtime, which is very short in NATO standard. But we do know he's going to use that time to have bilateral meetings. We haven't heard yet publicly from the French President Emmanuel Macron. He's been here since yesterday having meetings with his German and British counterparts, Merz and Sir Keir Starmer. Interestingly, he didn't speak on the way into the summit in the last hour or so. We do know that he criticised the American attack on Iran a few days ago. So let's see how that relationship goes and if there is a meeting between Trump and Macron, because they clashed at the G7 and that Trump called Macron out for his characterisation of why Trump had left the meeting early. So no sign of a meeting there yet, but obviously Macron is a big player here. The German Chancellor, Friedrich Merz, is also a big player here. So let's see if there's any discussions there around the table or bilaterally or in some kind of a breakout session this afternoon.
Yeah, and of course, you never know what kind of childish resentments that Trump harbours after he organised his big birthday military parade. Wasn't a patch on what happened on Bastille Day, which is allegedly what inspired Trump to want his own parade. So he may harbour a little resentment, you know, childish as it is, for Macron. Anyway, Suzanne, we leave it there. Suzanne Lynch, Brussels Bureau Chief for Bloomberg. Brett Bruin, President of the Global Situation Room, former Director of Global Engagement at the Obama White House. Brett, good morning.
Good to be with you, Pat.
Now, let's talk about the elephant in the room, Vladimir Putin. Because NATO is, I mean, has set its face totally against Putin's Russia. And the idea is they see Putin's Russia as their nemesis, and everything they do is to protect the eastern border and those eastern countries against the attentions of Putin, and yet Putin and Trump are pally, it would appear.
Yes, and I think this is the big unresolved question, Pat. While certainly Trump has showed up, he seems to be in good spirits. The allies have ponied up to the likes of 2%, now committing a further 3%. And yet, on board Air Force One on his way here, Trump seemed to cast doubt as to the U.S. commitment around Article 5, that joint defense pact, and, you know, said it was up to the definition of what that Article 5 actually meant. The problem with, you know, quibbling over the definition of Article 5 is that it's not really the deterrent then against Vladimir Putin that it's designed to be.
Yeah, if he doesn't believe that the U.S. might put boots on the ground in Poland, for example, in the event of a Russian invasion of that country following what Putin wants, which is the fall of Ukraine, if Putin believes that the United States won't act in spite of what might be seen as Trump's decisive action for its ally, Israel.
Yes, and I think this has been a point of challenge for the U.S. since Trump first raised the prospect that we might not be bound by that Article 5 commitment. And look, we also have the issue that stems from his unilateral attack on Iran, which is there wasn't any coordination, let alone communication with our allies. And if we are going to see more of this, you know, Wild West cowboy-esque behavior from Trump, it is going to just cast further strains across the alliance. And that on top of what's already a pretty tense relationship because of the threats of colonialism, the tariffs. So while Trump has patched over some of the problems here in The Hague, there are a whole lot of others that remain. And just, you know, the lack of consistency, the lack of reliability from Washington is a big issue.
What did you make of his F-bomb in criticizing Israel for what it did in, you know, in almost kiboshing his wonderful ceasefire?
Well, that's the thing is, you know, Trump obviously was upset with Netanyahu. I think it also is abundantly clear in this, including a piece in The Washington Post, where, you know, it detailed how Netanyahu essentially prodded Trump into this position. And so while he likes to talk about America first, it's really America following on the foreign front here. So, you know, Trump is going to have to show that he has some sort of foreign policy, doctrine, vision. What are the American interests here? And that is really, you know, unclear at this stage, even after the Iran attack.
So back then to Vladimir Putin, and, you know, we've been asking ever since the election campaigns and even the first one round, 2017, what does Putin have on Trump? Is it all about money, money, money? Is it about money laundering for Russian oligarchs or Russian crooks or even for Putin himself? You know, what is the nature of that relationship? It seems peculiar. The U.S. has demonstrated it is the mightiest military power on earth. So why should he be in any way subservient to Putin, which, if you remember, we saw in the flesh in the summit in Helsinki, where Trump deferred totally and repeatedly to Vladimir Putin.
I think a lot of this, Pat, has to do with Trump as the showman. And, you know, he wants to be able to have a cast of characters around him who have high profiles, who help, you know, to puff up his own sense of self-importance. And Putin, being an old KGB man, knows how to do that well. And so, you know, ultimately, you know, Trump is looking for the drama. He's looking for the publicity and the promotion factor here. You know, part of the problem, and this is where now 6 months into his term, you know, some of the interconnectedness of these international issues is coming into stark relief. And Trump is going to increasingly have problems because these issues are interrelated. Obviously, Russia, Iran, quite close and connected. The trade threats and issues are going to weigh on this notion that now all of these NATO allies have to fork up hundreds of billions in new investments in defense. So it is not going to be an easy path ahead, even if we may have smiles at the photo op this afternoon.
Now, the question of that unpredictability of Trump, and I mean everything from the tariffs. I mean, the tariffs have vanished for the moment. There was supposed to be a line of people, a queue of people with their trade deals in their brandished in their hands, ready to sign. No sign of any of them thus far. Keir Starmer did a Mickey Mouse kind of trade deal, but nowhere else do we see these trade deals. So how much of this is about distraction, deflection, and to get maybe to retrench from those trade deals?
Oh, I think a certain amount is about trying to change the prevailing narrative because, you know, we were promised that within 90 days we would see, you know, all sorts of trade deals coming through. As you mentioned, there's sort of a somewhat flimsy one that the Brits have managed to negotiate. But, you know, Trump has really struggled on this front, whether it's, you know, the 24-hour promise of resolving the war in Ukraine or on these trade deals. And I think that is going to continue to weigh on him as he, you know, tries to promote all of the things that he's managed to do. Even this ceasefire in the Middle East, it doesn't have any monitoring mechanism. It doesn't have any confidence building measures. There's no path ahead. And so, you know, at the end of the day, this, you know, effort at trying to strike deals is proven pretty fruitless in, you know, the first 6 months.
Now, there was a statement by, I think it was Anthony Scaramucci on the Rest is Politics US podcast, where he postulated that Putin, although he's playing Trump at the moment, he doesn't necessarily like dealing with someone who is as unpredictable as Donald Trump. That at the moment, he's obviously got the president's ear and he can manipulate him to some extent, but that could stop literally overnight.
It could. And look, Putin certainly has found himself crosswise with Trump before. Nonetheless, I think Putin has managed to wriggle out of some of those potentially challenging moments with Trump. And ultimately, you know, Putin is a master of manipulation, and he knows how to get the best of even, you know, the savviest of political leaders. And so, you know, I think he continues to feel confident that he is in the driver's seat in this relationship. And obviously, you know, with Trump continuing to cast doubt over America's commitment to Ukraine's struggle for freedom, he's got to be feeling pretty good in the Kremlin.
Now, with the ceasefire in the Middle East between Iran and Israel, the focus may now turn again to what's going on in Gaza. And I'm wondering to what extent the decline in support for Israel within the United States is reflective of maybe the unacceptable nature of what is being reported from Gaza and seen in the United States, whereas it may not be observed on popular television in Israel.
Yeah, I think that Netanyahu has really strained what were quite close ties, quite bipartisan ties in the U.S., and not just with Gaza, but even with this attack on Iran. All of it is starting to raise questions, including within Trump's own MAGA movement, as to, you know, what are the American interests here? Why are we allowing Netanyahu to be the driver of this crisis? And one where the U.S. interests are not always clear. And obviously, the situation in Gaza, you know, despite, you know, Trump's talk of a Gaza Riviera, there really is no plan. And let's not forget, there certainly is no ceasefire. The last one, which was mostly negotiated by the Biden team, has now expired.
Now, finally, we just go back to domestic affairs in the United States, Brett. And this is the lifting by ICE and by Homeland Security of all sorts of people and the deportations. Saw a report last evening of the father of three people who served in the Marines and fought for the United States in the various wars. The father was lifted by ICE. I mean, this has got to have ripples that will extend. And there are so many other examples of people who have served the United States and have been punished for that service.
There are another case of someone who was awarded a Purple Heart for being injured, serving the U.S. overseas in battle. You know, all of this is going to continue to weigh down, particularly on Republicans looking to get reelected. And the scope of these raids, the sense that, you know, none of the economic, the humanitarian consequences matter, I think ultimately will prove to be one of Trump's biggest overreaches. But for the moment, at least, he continues undeterred. And the Supreme Court, you know, handed him another victory to be able to deport immigrants, including to countries that they're not even from.
Which surprised me. I thought that there was some movement within the Supreme Court to stop his gallop. My final it's really curiosity. I'm wondering, and when we went back to Nazi Germany, we saw that there were ordinary people who became the stormtroopers, the goons for the Nazi party who, you know, would knock on Jewish doors and take out people, perhaps even their former neighbors. I mean, how is ICE recruiting people who are prepared to act like thugs, masked and disguised, who maybe a year ago were ordinary folk?
Yeah, and this also has an element of, you know, Trump trying to pull in some of his loyalists, whether it's into ICE or into military service. And, you know, the loss of a sense of both a nonpartisan police, security service, military is increasingly worrying. You saw that rally that Trump did at a army base where you had a number of uniformed American service members who were cheering on some of the more partisan statements. All of that's really alarming. And then on top of that, you know, this questioning of whether, you know, fundamental rights like habeas corpus are going to be suspended or even done away with. So it is a very concerning climate at the moment in the United States when it comes to the rule of law.
Brett Bruen, president of the Global Situation Room, former director of global engagement at the Obama White House. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.